with double game weeks now coming with double headaches. Reward takes us through the horror that was double game week 22, as well as takes us, has a look with us into game week 23, which could be a double game week as well, but hasn't been announced up until now. After that, we move on to all the action happening at the Africa Cup of Nations, where the Black Stars and the defending champions, Algeria, find themselves knocked out from the group stages. Oh, he takes us through all of the actions, the expectations that have been met in the group stages, and the disappointments as well. And he also previews what to expect in the knockout stages. Stay tuned for all of this on the Empty Stands podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to yet another episode of the Empty Stands podcast. My name is Reward, and on this episode, we'll break it down into two segments. So we'll have the FBL show, then we'll also have the AFCON show, but that will come later. So on the FBL segment, I'm joined by Chooks and our current leader on the Empty Stands League, Lekon. How's it going, guys? How's Game Week 22 for you guys? I'll start with Chooks.
Oh, it's nice to be here again and discussing the beautiful game. But it hasn't really been beautiful for me, especially when it comes to double game weeks. It strikes a fear and a tingling in my heart. Like, that's feeling and stuff. But really, double game week 22 wasn't nice to me. But not the worst that it could be. So, still all right.
Okay. Hi, Lekon. I know double game 22 was, is that your best of the season? I know you had a swell game 22. How did it go? Tell us about it.
Thanks for having me once again, Reward. It's always a pleasure to be on this podcast. The game of 22 was very good for me, thanks to decision to cap Bruno out of the blue. But actually, game week one has been my best game week for the season. That was the bonanza week where we all, packed 100 points. So I added 100 points for that week, but 93 points for this week.
Interesting. So speaking about double game weeks, like too excited, why do you think we keep falling for that scam called double game weeks? To provide proper context, only 5 double game week players scored 10 points or more in game week 22. So we had players like Ziyech, Webster, Bruno, Greenwood, and Fred. Meanwhile, 9 single game week players scored above 10 points. Lekon, you can go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's just natural human nature to want more, right? Anybody you give like 2 of something will always want 2 of that rather than 1 of the other thing. Without probably digging down into, is this 2 actually better than 1? So I just think it's natural human nature to want more without digging deep into, is this actually more in the true sense? Because I think for double game weeks, it's always better to go with a premium asset with a good game than a normal asset with 2 games ahead. Those are just my thoughts.
Yeah, and I remember when I clicked. So I clicked on my free hits pretty early. I think once game week 21 was over, I immediately, because my team felt like shit and I needed, since it was a double game week, right? So I felt, oh, okay. It was the amount of double game weekers were more than that of game week 21. But suddenly we started seeing postponements, COVID cases and the rest, and it was confirmed a shitty game week. And I instantly regretted clicking my free hits. Chooks, what do you think about the scam called double game week?
So in this era of postponed games, COVID-19 injuries and AFCON as well, looking at double game weeks, I don't think anyone should be in feel that need or that urge to act on it. Because I ask myself, if I leave my team the way it is, or if I go ahead to try to get in players for the double game, which would be more profitable? And trust me, if I left my team the way it was without bringing in 6 new players, using my free hits, of course, I would have had a better score in this game. So it's just madness, this period.
Interesting. So moving forward, we've seen the Ginger Prince, KDB, like I call him, and Bruno have suddenly sprung up from nowhere and they've become that premium assets that we know them to be, right? Can we see they are back? Lee, I'll start with you.
I think KDB has hit form at the right time for City, looking at their current run. While Bruno's case is even more interesting to me because Ragnik has changed the formation after experimenting with that useless 4-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2. So, and if you notice in the last few matches, Bruno has come back to the Bruno of old. Actually, looking at our games, you can see he's creating more chances, scoring more goals, getting into good positions, just to avoid, you know, the usual Pep Roulet or KDB injury issues. I think Bruno is the man to go for in the absence of Salah.
Interesting. Chooks, what do you think? Do you share same sentiments?
So, I'm so glad seeing Bruno back on the scorecards and assist cards as well. The highest scoring player in the double game week. It's something that I'm very happy about. Now, the question of, is Bruno back? Is KDB back? Those are quite a tough question. So, the Pep Roulet, and looking at the amount of quality he has at his disposal, yes, KDB may be back, but I'm not even assured if he's going to be rotation proof going forward. But as for Bruno, it's clear that he's one player that Ralf Rangnick has in the thick of his plans, and I'm certain he's going to be a more influential figure going forward for United. So of course, he's beginning to look like a player we can count on again. However, because of the way United are playing, having a first half performance that's good and a second half performance that's not good or vice versa, I can't really bank on the team. So if I can't bank on the team, then I can't bank on Bruno like as a long-standing asset. Unlike last season when I was like, when in doubt, captain Bruno. I can't say that from the bottom of my heart. But if Bruno is going to have impact, of course he will. And he's one to look out for if Salah stays longer in the African Cup of Nations.
So speaking about Salah, right? If you're like me and you still have Salah in your team, what's the plan? I think I was thinking of leaving him too, because I think he'll be back by game week 24. Egypt draw, they're going to play Cote d'Ivoire, right? And the Cote d'Ivoire team I don't think the Egypt team can beat those guys. So I think Salah is coming back very soon. So if you're like me and you still have Salah in your team, what would you do, Liko?
I think if you've kept Salah for this long, right, there's no point selling him now, only to buy him back in how many days' time? Because like you rightly said, it's very, very on the probability is very on the high side that Ivory Coast will dump them out. If not, I think they will jam Cameroon or somebody pretty soon, because the half of the draw, I think, is the tougher half. So I'll just advise keep Salah and expect him back in game week 24 or 25 max to come back into your team at this point.
Chicks, you still have Salah in your team?
Yeah, funny thing is I still do. I thought to sell him last game week, but I held on. And the fact that I used my free chip as well meant I didn't necessarily need to do transfers. Now, looking at the fact that there's going to be international break coming soon, it just seems like everything is in line and is instructive for us to keep Mo Salah. Mo Salah, like you rightly said, goes up against Cote d'Ivoire, and the Egypt side have not really been fantastic, to say the least, in this competition. So no one knows what to expect. So best or worst case scenario, he's back next week. But who knows? But what is certain is that game week 24, or at worst, like Lincoln said, 25, the Egyptian king will be back and firing in our FPL team. So it's a keep for me.
Interesting. So let's move on to Jarrod Bowen. He's been having a pretty decent season so far. Some might even term him essential. Just looking at his stats, I think he has had a return in almost every game week. He's even had double returns in like five game weeks. Last game week, dropped another 7 points. The previous game week, it was 16. Next, the other one was 14. The guy has been really consistent. Can we say that Jarrod Bowen is essential going forward? Lekon?
Yeah, looking at the way West Ham play right now, I think Bowen started the season slowly. It was Antonio and Benrahma at the start of the season. But right now, sometimes I'm even surprised to know Antonio plays as a striker for West Ham, because all he does is hustle up front and all the chances keep falling into Bowen's path. And we all know West Ham, they score an average of, two goals per game. And most times, Bowen is either assisting or the one scoring. And looking at his price, right, it's about 6.8 million if you just want to get him now. For the output you're going to get, I actually think it's a no-brainer. It's very, very little risk for high returns, in my opinion. So, yeah, it should be an essential for your team.
Chuck, do you have Bowen in your squad? And if not, do you have any plans of getting him in?
So, ahead of the just-concluded game week, I used my free hit, and I did consider bringing Jarrod Bowen for most of it. But for some reason, I brought him. Mason Mount instead. So let's not talk about how that panned out for me. But the thing is, Jarrod Bowen has really stepped up for that West Ham side. And the goals we saw that were coming from Antonio at the start of the season that caused everyone to jump in and get him as their FPL striker seems to have dried out. That sea of goals just seems to have dried out. And Bowen is looking like that live wire that is keeping the West Ham team going and getting some sort of attacking output for them in terms of goals or assists. So at this point, I do not have Jarrod Bowen in my team. I still have Mikel Antonio. I'm certain that before the start of this game week, Mikel Antonio is gone because I can't keep him no more. And if I'm to have any West Ham asset because of the fact that they score a lot of goals, it's going to be Jarrod Bowen.
Let's not even speak about Antonio.
It's a very delicate matter for me. I'll be pained. I may start crying if I start speaking about him.
All right, so let's move on to new signings. Of course, we're in the January transfer window, right? And some clubs like Newcastle are already going gung-ho. Aston Villa are not, they are no slacks as well. They've gotten Coutinho, Lucas Digne, and Newcastle, they've gotten Trippier and Chris Wood. Looking at this new signings, Lekor, is there anyone here that is worth a punt?
Coutinho, my eyes is on Coutinho because, of course, the little magician. I don't need further introduction with what he did to us over the weekend, coming in to score the equalizer against United. But the thing about these new signings is, I would give them like two or three games, watch how the coach plans to use them, and blend them into the team before jumping on the bandwagon. Digne is someone I can also give a thought if Gerald, improves the defense of the team. But as for Trippier, count me off that. I don't think I'm going for him anytime soon. Newcastle hasn't still looked impressive defensively. So, nothing for Trippier yet.
Interesting. So, Chooks, unlike Lekon, I think I was trigger happy, and with what I saw from Coutinho in 20 minutes, the first thing I did was just to buy him. I didn't even care. Because I think I had a flashback of what Coutinho was when he was still with Liverpool, and I was like, nah, this guy is coming into my team. So I got him. Do you think that's a good move, Chooks?
So it's painful that I didn't see the last 15, 17 minutes of the United game, and I didn't see his performance against United. But one thing I can say is, with the way Steven Gerrard sets up his team, with the two tens just in and around the edge of the box supporting the striker, that is where Coutinho is most relevant. That's where he's at his best. And now having someone of that quality, even though he hasn't had as much game time in his bag in the bag as he would have liked, but having someone who has been in the league, understands the league, and understands how to manipulate that position to its fullest, I think Coutinho is actually one to get. The problem, like Lekon rightly mentioned, is it's a new signing. they need to be integrated gradually into the team. Are they going to be seeing starts? Are they going to be on the bench? How much impact or how much can the coach really count on them right now? And that's the only thing that's going to let me wait one more game week before I get Coutinho. But definitely, of the new signing, Coutinho is the most flashy, at least as at this time that we speak. Coutinho is one that actually strikes the eye or strikes the chord.
All right, so let's move on to captaincy. It's an interesting, we have an array of stars this game week, right? Salah's going to AFCON has been such a blessing. I can't even lie. Because it was getting so boring then. But now we have a lot of people we can, there's a variety of options now, right? So, Lekan, who's your captain this game week?
I'm repeating the game week 22 trick. I'm still going for Bruno because it's West Ham. West Ham are quite open. They conceded 3 goals to Leeds, a very poor team over the weekend. I'm not saying United is going to win. All I'm saying is Bruno is going to deliver come game week 23. So I'm sticking with him with my captaincy.
Interesting. Shooks, who's your captain? Please don't tell me, Bruno.
So I really do not like discussing this captaincy thing. Why? The last time I did, I was going for Luke Shaw, who was suspended, and it seems Ragnik does not have him in his plans. Luckily for me, I ended up not going for Luke Shaw when I found out he was suspended. But what I'm saying is, I really felt something would happen with Luke Shaw over the double game week. Now, I'm being asked this question. The question is being posed at me again. And it's just bringing flashbacks of all the past decisions I've made since Salah left for the Africa Cup of Nations. And I'm not sure which direction to go. Over the last game week, Jack Harrison delivered a hat-trick for Leeds United. And I'm tempted with the Leeds-Newcastle fixture. It's looking like one where there'll be lots of goals because Leeds, they would rather leave their defense open and go all out attack. And Newcastle, like we know, are not the best defensively. So I feel Harrison is going to enjoy himself in that fixture. And for that reason, tough call. I don't have Harrison in my team right now, so I need to buy him if I'm going to go with this. But tough call, Jack Harrison it is for me.
Interesting. If I was going to go with the Leeds Newcastle fixture, I'm not sure it's Harrison. How many times has Harrison scored the hat-trick? I think I would go Rafinha instead if I was going to go with that fixture. But I think for me, when I see Man City against Southampton, all I can think of is 9-0. I don't know why. But that's...
They've considered 9 in the last 2 seasons.
Exactly. And I think they're due for their regular dose of another 9-0.
Interesting. Yeah, one time it was United and the other time it was Leicester City or someone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they are due for another 9-0 and I feel like this fixture is it. So I think I definitely need to get on a Man City asset. I don't know, it could be Cancelo, it could be KDB, it could be Foden, anyone, but I think I need a City asset for this game week. All right, guys. So just some few tips for Gaming 23. I would advise, of course, we all know this, nobody should make early transfers at this stage of the season, right? Because there could be postponements. And there's also the hope that some teams will have double game weeks this Gaming 23. Seems like Aston Villa, right? So just hold on to those transfers just a little bit towards the end of the, towards the start of the game week. Try and avoid using your wild card. I know people are trigger happy. Like I wasted my free hits, but just try and avoid it. You can take hits to navigate this period. You need that wild card later in the season. If you've taken out Salah, always try and get a plan or just have that plan of getting him back because I'm pretty sure he'll be back in game 24, right? So either you bought Ronaldo or KDB, whoever, just make sure there's a plan in place to get Salah back, right? So with that, we've come to the end of this segment of the show. But stay tuned. We have Ohis talking us through the highs and the lows from the group stages of the AFCON. He's also previewing the knockout rounds from Cameroon. So Lincoln, Chooks, that's all from here. Thanks guys for joining me on the show today. Ohis, you can take it up from here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thanks, it's always a pleasure.
Hey guys, welcome to the AFCON segment. I'm Ohis and I'm joined by Tayo, one of the most promiscuous architects in Lagos. You can follow him on Twitter at @D_architect. Tayo.
It's good to finally be on the Empty Stands podcast. It's been long overdue for me. I'm a big fan. And I just have to say again, that title is strictly hearsay. I am not the most promiscuous architect in Lagos. I have people I look up to in that aspect. Well, thanks for having me. Exactly.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'll get your number, and ahead of your next appearance here, I'll get your proper rating. But anyways, Ty, it's good to have you here finally. I know most times we try to get you, you're always busy, or it doesn't just work out due to your schedule with work and, I mean, with ladies. So let's get right into it. The group stage is over. It ended today. It's been a tournament of highs, lows. I think we should just start with microwaving our predictions before the AFCON started. Because before the tournament, we tipped some teams to win the trophy. Those that will be dark horses, MVP and Golden Boots. I, for one, I tipped Algeria, Senegal as my favorite. Dark horses, I tipped Mali. And I can't remember the second country, but I know Mali was in the mix because of how much I rate Yves Bissouma. For MVP and my Golden Boots, I think I predicted Bounedjah Baghdad for my Golden Boot and Rezun Boly for Golden Ball. That's MVP rather. And I'm pleased to announce to you that of all my predictions, Senegal has been underwhelming rather. Algeria is out. So my Golden Boot and MVP predictions are in the mud. Mali, in and out, most goals from the spot. They have 3, but it's been a very shocking tournament. So Tayo, I'll come to you for this one. We're in the business end of the tournament now. Who has lived up to your expectations and who has hugely disappointed you?
Let's start with the disappointments, the most obvious ones. Algeria and Senegal. Algeria for very obvious reasons. I think in my history of like following the African Cup of Nations, we've never had the defending champions defend their title with just one goal. I mean, up until that, well, sort of consolation goal against Cote d'Ivoire, they had gone two matches and one half of the third match without scoring. And I think that was the worst performance we've gotten from any defending champion at AFCON. Well, to the best of my memory, that's the worst performance we've gotten. And another disappointing team was Senegal, considering how stacked their squad is, and they barely managed to scrape by two ball draws, 0-0, and a 1-0 win. By a 90+7 minute penalty. When you have big names like Sadio Mane, Dia, you have Koulibaly, you have Mendy, like you expect that to be one of the bullies, sort of how Nigeria has been. You expect that to be one of the bullies at the tournament, and they just managed to scrape by. So Senegal and Algeria have been really disappointing for me. I did predict Nigeria to have a good run, and I'm glad that's still on track. For my dark horses, I had Cote d'Ivoire. And to be honest, they've been more than impressive. They've been more than impressive for me. I think they topped their group as with 7 points, 2 wins and a draw. A very solid, very solid, very convincing win against the defending champions. And the sheer quality of their attack, they look like they could go all the way. Also, Cameroon with Vincent Abubakar and Kotoko Ekambi, they've been very impressive as well, showing that okay, they're not just hosting to come and welcome us and come and have tourists around. They're hosting to win as well. So it's been a turnaround of drama, and I look forward to the business end. To the business end.
All right, thank you for that, Tayo. I mean, you spoke about a lot of things. I'll just touch light on some of the high points of what you said in your response to my first question. Let's start with our own country. I mean, the popular saying, charity begins at home. How do you think Nigeria has been? You know, there's something where you say, okay, it's all about the results, nothing matters. But there's also an attitude to how you go about the results. August Negwavon has become only the second coach in Nigeria's history at the African Cup of Nations to finish the group with maximum 9 points. Is equaling his own personal record, where he did that with a group of Senegal, Cameroon, and I think Zimbabwe in 2006. To do it again, yes, you may say Nigeria were already favorites to qualify from this group, but in the tournament, we've seen so many upsets. What do you think, or how can you describe how the Super Eagles have been so far at the tournament?
First off, it's been nothing short of impressive, because I'd like to remind them, we could have been favorites, judging by the quality of the initial squad that was announced. But I'd like to remind people that in the fixtures building up to AFCON, the World Cup qualifiers, we suffered some upsets, losing a home game to, was it Central African Republic or Cape Verde? I can't remember which was it right now.
It was Central African Republic.
Game. Yes, we lost a home game. We drew another that we expected to win. And then we announced a pretty solid squad with informed strikers in Dennis and Bonaventure of Watford and Victor Osimhen of Napoli. And build up to the AFCON, and then both of them were suddenly unavailable and we had to call up replacements for them. Typically, that's enough to reduce the morale of any team, having your best players being held back by their clubs or by whatever reason. We tried calling on our dependable goal scorer in Ighalo, but his club also withheld him. Him being the highest goal scorer at the last AFCON would have helped. But Eric Guavon has done a wonderful job also with players he did not pick, mind you. So it's basically been a case of, like he said, giving the players freedom to express themselves on the pitch. And they've done it beautifully. Moses Simon is in the form of his life, getting past players with so much ease. You have Kelechi Iheanacho being the best supporting striker you could ever see. You have Awoni linking up, rolling back the under 17 years with Kelechi. You have General Ndidi marshalling the defense alongside Arigo. Yeah, it's been very wonderful to watch. Not just getting wins, but getting them in very convincing displays, holding Egypt to a 1-0 win, restricting Salah to barely 29 touches of the ball. That was in the first match. In the second match, we had Sudan, and it looked like they were on strings throughout the entire match. 3-0 at some point. We considered a flimsy penalty. Then we went into the last match against Guinea-Bissau, using our B team and still running out easy 2-0 winners. So it's been nothing short of impressive. And full credit should go to the coach and his team.
All right, Tayo, thank you for that. You really, really summed up everything. You really, really summed it up. I mean, I was talking on one of my favorite sports channels, Elegbete TV Radio, on Monday, and I said the Super Eagles' performance can be summarized into three C's: cautious, compact, and collective. Cautious because we've not considered any goal from open play. Yes, Olaina's foul was a penalty, but it was very, very, very cheap. I feel like if the game was a kind of level game, like the Nigeria-Egypt game, it wouldn't have been blown. Compact because you see everyone working hard on and off the ball. And collective because everyone is involved. We don't have a player that has scored more than one goal. So everyone is getting in with the action. Of course, we'll get to people that have played well in the tournament and people that have not so delivered in the tournament. Yeah, with also, other questions coming up.
Please go ahead. Cautious, collective.
Compact and collective.
Yeah, okay, cautious, compact, and collective. I don't think we'd be cautious, though.
Give me a reason why.
We don't seem to be approaching games with nerves or tenacity or trying not to commit bodies forward. I think it's more controlled because if you notice, we've had a very good handle of all the teams we faced. We've not been all over the place. I think we've been more controlled than cautious. In the first match, we say we're cautious because our fullbacks didn't overlap as much. They were being way, way off Salah's touches and his speed. Well, in the second match against Sudan, I mean, we saw Aina bombing forward. Sanusi had more furrow into the opposing half. Same thing against Guinea-Bissau, having Collins and Ibuehi pretty much in the opposing half all the time. So I think it's been more controlled than cautious. But that remains to be seen in the subsequent matches.
Okay. That's nice one, Ashokwa. I think I agree with what you mean, with what you said about control. But like I said, I used Egypt and I used the first 30 minutes and the last 30 minutes of our first two group games. That was first 30 minutes against Egypt and the last 30 minutes against Sudan. I felt like we could have gone for more goals against Sudan. And I felt like after Kelechi's goal, our aim was just cut these guys off, supplying Salah and so on and so forth. But like I said, we can't overemphasize talking about Nigeria. We have to touch base other countries. So one of my best songs by Ajebota 22. I don't know if you guys can hear the song in my background.
I can't hear it yet. What song is that?
Ghana Bounce. So,
I see where
just
you're
before
going.
AFCON, Shatta Wale and Burna Boy had a heated debate on social media, and some people were praying and hoping for Ghana to even make it all the way to the AFCON final. And that if Nigeria beats Ghana in the AFCON final to get our fourth AFCON, it's going to shut down the internet and so on and so forth. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. Tayo, what do you think about Ghana's excursion to Cameroon? How disappointing were they at this year's tournament?
Well, first off, pardon me, but I have to say, you cannot be more than what you are. Yes,
ouch! Oh my God!
they won the African Cup of Nations, say four times. But that's heavy. That's heavy history. They haven't won it in 40 years, and they passed the dream team of, well, Asamoah Gyan, Michael Essien, like the dream names. The senior paint steel, and well, I can't really say much because I didn't expect so much of them in my tournament review. So, but I wasn't really disappointed. I didn't expect them to go out in the group stages, you know, but wow, and because of the rifts, it's glad in my heart. It's glad in my heart. I won't lie. I was ecstatic. I was happy. I added a little bit of fuel to the fire that Diddy went out. So I was excited about the exit. Sorry to any Ghanaians.
Yeah.
Any Ghanaian fans that may be listening.
I just want to chip that. I think I agree with you. I didn't really see Ghana going all the way, but I'm not going to lie. I did not predict. I told someone before AFCON started that Ghana is going to be third in that group. I mean, I already thought Aubameyang and Lemina will play for Gabon. I didn't know these two guys that are firing them, Alivina and the other guy, I can't remember his name right now, the two guys up front for Gabon that are firing. I even feel Gabon will make the last eight. I feel they'll beat Burkina Faso. But when I saw their display with Gabon, I knew that Ghana will not win Comoros. So I even put it out on Twitter. I said the best result Ghana can get is a draw against Comoros. Congrats to Malawi. And I hope luck shines on Comoros, because I didn't see Comoros winning. But I was just too sure Ghana won. So I was like, it's going to be a draw. So enough about Ghana. Let's discuss the biggest upset. I mean, Equatorial Guinea beat them, and we thought they would come all guns blazing into today's game. Where did it all go wrong? I mean, this was a team that they bought the Ghana were talking about 3-0, and people like Desmond Bamiji came up with different jokes. Arsenal can't even go well, even if they have. Ghana can't even have an AFCON party with Thomas on their side. People came up with a lot of jokes after their pre-AFCON warm-up with Algeria, where they lost 3-0. And everyone was like, man, Algeria is cooking. Saïd doesn't even have a shirt. Bounedjah is not starting. Slimani is starting. Feghouli, Brahimi, Atal, Ben Saïd. The team looks so complete. And one goal scored. Where did it all go wrong for the defending champions, Tayo?
Okay, you said the team did look complete. Yes, there's a difference between looking complete and being complete. The match preseason, the pre-AFCON warm-up, they beat Ghana 3-3 goals. I mean, they were without their talisman, Mahrez, yes?
Yes, you're right.
He arrived late to camp. And I think I'll put it down to that weakness. By the time he was there, maybe the team had to be rejigged. Someone had to drop for him to retain his starting shirt. And then there was that. And I think their first match against Sierra Leone,
yeah.
Yes, their first match against Sierra Leone, the world-class performance the Sierra Leone keeper put up, I think that kind of shook them. Because, I mean, you're going up against Sierra Leone, who is expected to be one of the poorer teams at the tournament, and everything you throw at this person, you're not getting, like, they have a response for it. I think he made six. Then I saw a video clip where he made 6-7 really good stops. And then that kind of performance can just, you know, shake you a bit, and you're beginning to wonder, okay, what's going to happen? And then they didn't get a win in that match. They went into the next match against Equatorial Guinea. So it was something that they would probably say supposed to be an easy match. And then they stutter as well. And it's things like that could just build up in terms of discontent within the squad, low morale, and not making any excuses for Algeria, but it's AFCON. There's no real small teams anymore. Everyone is looking to cause an upset. I mean, this is, bringing back the case of Ghana, this is Comoros' first ever AFCON. And they went toe-to-toe with the four-time champions, and well, and they came out winners. For Algeria, it's difficult to see where it all went wrong. could be morale within the squad, could be discontent, trying to shoehorn Mahrez back into the squad after a really good performance just before the AFCON. Could be a combination of a number of factors. But in my opinion, one less difficult thing for Nigeria to face on our way to winning this thing.
All right, that was very bold. He said on our way to winning this thing. So let's look at the knockout games now. I mean, we weren't sure until a few minutes ago about the knockout games that will take place. Is there any stats knockout tie for you?
Two ties. Nigeria, Tunisia, Senegal, Cape Verde. Nigeria, wow. Tunisia.
There's a game I was willing to hear and I didn't hear it, but please tell me why.
Nigeria, Tunisia, for very obvious reasons. I'd love to see Kadri and another. Like, I'd love to see Kadri going up against Aino. Could be a very mouthwatering
lovely duo.
Because Aino likes to bomb forward. He has very good coverage of the entire right wing. He has the stamina to go up and down. I'd love to see that duo. And yeah, that's basically what I'm looking forward to in Nigeria versus Tunisia. And then Senegal versus Cape Verde. Cape Verde are very plucky. They're one of the, in quote, underdogs who tend to just come out swashbuckling. They don't care who you are. They want to come and show themselves. They want to come and prove themselves. And I'd love to see Senegal raise their game, because we're now in the super important part of it. If you draw 0-0, who knows, they could drag you to penalties and you lose based on that. So I'm expecting them to raise their game, and I'd love to see them against Cape Verde.
All right. The tie I thought you mentioned was Cote d'Ivoire, Egypt. I need to ask why it's not one of your standout ties, because, of course, Nigeria, Tunisia is one of the games I would like to watch as well. But why?
I don't think it's a standout tie. I don't see too much about Egypt for them to be an issue.
For Cote d'Ivoire, I guess.
Cote d'Ivoire. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, true. I understand what you're saying. For you to want to look up to or look out for a tie, there has to be like a battle, maybe a duel, a midfield battle, and exactly. So on and so forth. I am communicating what you're saying, but it's also good to know that apart from the three games we mentioned, the other round of 16 ties are Burkina Faso versus Gabon, Guinea versus the Gambia, Cameroon versus Comoros, Morocco versus Malawi, and Mali versus Equatorial Guinea. The truth is, my two standard ties are Nigeria, Tunisia, which I will not be watching for post-traumatic stress reasons. One of my worst AFCON experiences was 2004, and people are saying we beat them in 2019, and I'm like, yes, we beat them in 2019 because our birthright in AFCON is the bronze medal. If it was in any other stage, I would have been scared of facing Tunisia. So I wish the Super Eagles all the best, but it's one of the games I'm really scared about. And
if our birthright is the bronze medal, don't you think we would make our way to the final?
we'll defeat anything in front. Well, that's what I'm hoping for. But for my own personal reasons, because the pictures of 2004, 18 years ago, are still clear in my head. I don't want the pictures to be clear. That's why I said, I wish the Eagles all the best. I am not removing my support. I don't just want to see the game. I don't want to be part of the drama that goes with the game, please. If it was any other country, I mean, last AFCON, we played Cameroon. We played, I think, South Africa, en route meeting Algeria before we got knocked out. I watched every game. Yes, I was not happy because Iwobi was starting. I'm not Iwobi's best friend and so on and so forth. But I get what you're saying, but I don't really want to deliberate on the tie. Like I said, it's just personal to me. I don't really have anything to say. Like, I can't give you a point why we shouldn't be Tunisia, but I don't want to watch the game for my own reason and for my own personal reasons, please. Also, in the knockout brackets, we've seen that some, what's the word? There's some teams that we tipped to make it all the way to the final, but sadly, might meet before then. So, for example, on Nigeria's side of the bracket, there's most likely going to be a quarterfinal tie with Burkina Faso and Gabon, and a semifinal tie with Cameroon if they win Comoros, and the winner of course, the Guinea versus Gambia game. So are we to expect any, what's the word? Do you think anything will spoil the party? Like, you know the way when this bracket comes and you're like, Nigeria sure, this person sure win, that person sure win. Do you think there'll be any upsets? Like, for example, do you think maybe Comoros can beat Cameroon or Gambia can beat Guinea or Eritrea Guinea can beat? Would there be any surprises? Okay, let's do that. Just 8 games. So Burkina Faso, Gabon. I'll go for Gabon of you. Okay.
I'm going for Burkina Faso.
Nigeria, Tunisia.
Nigeria.
Nigeria, Tunisia.
For obvious reasons. Nigeria.
Okay, for very personal reasons, I'm not predicting that game. Senegal, Cape Verde.
50-50. Senegal edges it.
I think Senegal edges it. That spirit of the game against Zimbabwe means Senegal will edge it. Mali, Equatorial Guinea.
Mali.
I think Mali. It's a clear one. Equatorial Guinea, they've had a beautiful tournament, but I think it's time to say goodbye. Guinea versus the Gambia.
Guinea.
Naby Keita has proved that he can play 3 games without injury.
Without injuries.
Yes. So I don't think he has played 270 consecutive minutes for Liverpool. So with that run, I just feel like Guinea might have a bit more in their locker to see the game through. Gambia, we know that they are good, but you need a bit of experience. And Sili National, they've come a long way, and this is always their bus stop. And I feel like they will want to go one step further. Cameroon, Comoros.
Nobody's stopping me, said Aboubakar anytime soon, so Cameroon.
I'm going for Cameroon for one reason. I don't think it will be a massacre like their game with Ethiopia, but I'm going for Cameroon for one reason. Cameroon have enough in their bench to change setup, formation, and the likes. Comoros will get a goal, but Cameroon is going to definitely go through. I mean, it's structured just like the Euros for Cameroon to make the final. That's why I would love if Nigeria can make it all the way to the semi-final so we can spoil their party at Olembe National Stadium. Because they are playing all their
Cameroon
games.
Up until the final.
No, semi-finals. The way my bracket is winner of Nigeria, Tunisia plays Gabon, Burkina Faso. Yeah?
Yes.
And the winner of that game plays the winner of Senegal / Cape Verde. Okay, all right, it's up until the final. I'm wrong. My bracket is wrong. So
Nigeria, so my semi-final is this. Nigeria, Senegal, Cameroon, Cote d'Ivoire.
Nigeria, Senegal.
Cameroon, Cote d'Ivoire.
Let me see the possibility of that happening. Okay, I think that's possible. That's very possible. So you're saying Nigeria, Senegal, Cameroon, Cote d'Ivoire.
Yeah. Cote d'Ivoire beat Egypt and they faced the winner of Morocco, Malawi, and they beat them too.
Yeah. So we can meet Ivory Coast in the semi-final, not Cote d'Ivoire. Abi?
It's Senegal we're meeting in the semi-final.
Okay, Senegal rather. No problem. Let's see how that goes. I mean, the knockout round is box office. You go hard or you go home. That's just the way it is. So my last question before we conclude on tonight's pod is, do you think anyone can catch Aboubakar in the race for the Golden Boots? And who do you think will clinch the MVP award. Mind you, the MVP normally doesn't go to, in quotes, popular names. I think 2013, everybody clamored for Aristide Barnes. They gave Jonathan Petropa. 2015, everybody clamored for, what's this guy's name in Ghana? I can't remember his name right now, but they gave Christian Atsu. 2017, they gave, Benjamin Mokanjo of Cameroon. 2019, it was Ismaël Bannassia of Algeria. So it normally doesn't go to a no name. So everyone shouting, Pepe, Pepe, Pepe. I feel like the technical study group will purposely go for like a lower name. So I think it's going to someone that I don't want to mention. I want you to drop your own prediction for our listeners. Then I will say mine before I wrap it up. I mean, because mine has gone with the win. So I have the chance to like predict. So I want to know, Tayo, your MVP nominee, and if you feel anyone can catch up with Vincent Abubakar, who is currently on 5 goals. The next is Ibrahim Kone, who is on 3 goals. All penalties, though. And Mali have a mouth-watering game against Equatorial Guinea. What are your thoughts, Tayo?
I don't think anybody is catching Abubakar, first of all. He's in red hot form. And he's also on penalty duty. So come on to me, I think he'll be there or thereabout.
Okay. For the MVP.
As for my MVP, it depends. I'm looking at two things that will make it all the way to the final. I'm looking at Nigeria and I'm looking at Cote d'Ivoire. Those two countries, mainly because they've had very impressive players, like very impressive individual performances. You could mention for Cote d'Ivoire, you could mention Pepe, you could mention Seredia.
Tangari, you mean?
Gradel. It was Gradel I was trying to say.
Okay, Gradel. Yeah, Gradel.
Yeah, you could mention Pepe, you could mention Gradel for Nigeria.
Sangare has looked good too.
Yes, Sangare has been very impressive holding that midfield. And
I think you should recommend him to mine in your DM search.
let's focus on one thing here. Let's focus on the AFCON. You can't be bringing my club boys to AFCON. And then for Nigeria, you could look at the deliverance minister, Moses Simon. You could look at Aribo. You could look at Iheanacho. I can't really say now, but I'll lean towards Kelechi Iheanacho for the MVP award.
All right, guys. Thank you very much, Tayo, me for the golden boots. I think Abubakar will just clinch it. He's on spot kicks. And he has shown that he's not just good from the spots. Scored with his head and both feet. For the MVP, I think my pick is going to be Moses Simon. Not because I see Nigeria winning it or getting all the way, but he has shown he can play his trade and he has shown how in 13 minutes he could change the game. Thanks a lot, guys, for listening. Please don't forget to subscribe on our podcast, on your favorite podcast apps, and follow us on Twitter at The Empty Stand and on Instagram at The Empty Stands Podcast. See you guys after the knockout rounds. We'll be releasing another episode just before the final to review every action from the knockout stages and preview the final just before the 6th of February. Till then, take care, guys. Goodbye.
Take care.
And God bless the Super Eagles of Nigeria. Tayo, thanks again.
It's been my pleasure. It's been my pleasure.